This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy. Thank you all for joining us again. This evening's program, in just a moment, Zhao Wang will introduce herself. She's with The Hungry Squirrel, and she's a little bit tied into our guests last week as well. So in just a moment, Zhao will be back and tell you all about what she's up to. Hi, I'm Carol Murphy, and you're listening to Heartstock Radio. I'm your host, and our guest tonight is Zhao Wang. Hi, Zhao.
Hi there.
Thanks for being here. So you have The Hungry Squirrel, among many other things. Just sitting here chatting briefly before we started, I learned all kinds of things that a lot of people probably don't know about you. And we're going to start out, as usual, kind of telling a little bit about your background and who you are. A lot of people here in Butte, probably as soon as we say Hungry Squirrel, they go, oh yeah, I know her. But I'm guessing there's a lot of people that know nothing about you.
Well, thanks for having me. And I guess as Carol has said, I do run and operate The Hungry Squirrel and partner with Dishability. And basically, it stemmed from my love for food. So growing up, we moved to the U.S. in 1994 as refugees, and we moved to Minnesota. There, basically...
Why Minnesota?
My parents just wanted to move to Minnesota, and we have family all over. We have family in California, in France, in Belgium, in Australia, and they really had their heart set on a place that snowed and was very cold. So we moved to Minnesota. We had one great uncle there, and... You know, growing up, my parents loved traditional food, and of course, we explored all other options, but being in the household, it was always fun to help my mom cook, and, you know, I was doing prep work for about 16 years of my life, so being able to learn some of her recipes and just knowing, you know, generally how to operate a kitchen, and so... I ended up, you know, loving food. And when I went to college in Minnesota, I also continued to love food because we were kind of in a food desert as well in terms of the diversity of food. So,
and that was in Minnesota.
That was also in Minnesota at the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University. Yeah. So then after college, I moved out to Montana because I had some ceramic ties. I did some ceramic workshops during college and decided that I really loved it, and I found a job in Butte, and I guess I've been here since.
And that was your undergrad degree?
That was, yep.
Yeah, in Minnesota?
Mm-hmm. It was, yes.
So we were talking a little bit about this before as well. Why it's traditional Vietnamese food, or do you go beyond that? But what is exactly this tie between the beautiful food that you create and the ceramics?
Oh, I think it's mostly just being able to share a meal with somebody. So eating pho, you know, I've never really thought about serving our food mobily. I think that was a huge challenge. And I always thought, no, you can't serve a hot bowl of soup with, you know, toppings on top. It's just not fresh. I can't do it. And I think that limiting factor became much of a reality because all of my friends were asking about it. Like, can we just have some to take home? Mm. And so, you know, outside of dinner parties, I'd send them home with food.
People love. I mean, have you ever met anybody that does not like traditional Vietnamese?
You know, surprisingly, I have. It's just something that you, when you try it, you know if you like it or not. And a lot of times it's very comforting for most people. But I think it is kind of a novel dish if you've grown up in a very rural area without any of that influence and you haven't tried it. So I think it's very interesting for me to always observe how people react to it.
So once you decided to come to Butte and friends started asking to take your food home, the light bulb kind of went on and you thought, this is really a hot item and
I should actually... Oh. No, I avoided it for years. I probably have avoided it for various reasons. I think the food industry is very difficult to be in and I think it's hard work. It's something that's really enjoyable for me. So... essentially, it started for me because it was a stress reliever from school. I'm in school for engineering, and it's a lot of work where sometimes you don't get to use that creative side of your brain. And I was just making a bunch of food that I don't think my boyfriend could absorb if he could, you know, eat five meals a day. I just was making a lot of food. So I think getting the ingredients and having the right ingredients for certain dishes, I think I just was always really desperate for getting that material, getting, you know, my supply from grocery stores. And the Hungry Squirrel, I basically pack food into my suitcase every vacation that I take. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the packing mentality that I had always had. And going back to, I think, my childhood, so my nickname at home is Sop, which is Vietnamese for squirrel. And so this all kind of tied it together where it was just a hilarious thing for me and something that was really fun and creative. And, you know, I was not ashamed of stuffing food in my suitcase anymore and just taking one for the team, I suppose.
Well, this is very fascinating to me because you're an artist who decided to become an engineer, and that's not usually what artists decide to do. Help us understand that.
I think it was more of retraining my brain. I had a lot of difficult experiences in terms of like my apprenticeship and also just mental blocks into how I could execute an idea. And I learned a lot of very creative, awesome processes in school for art. However, I think it was really hard for me to, again, execute those ideas because I just couldn't sort through my emotions, honestly. So engineering school basically gave me definite yes, no, right and wrong answers to choose from. And I think that way of thinking is actually very productive because it's not that you're limiting your other factors. It's you're going through all these different options to obtain the right fit or a group of ideas that will be able to execute your ideas. So I think going to engineering school for me was a way to understand my emotions, but then secondly, learn more about ceramics in a way that I just didn't want to keep doing trial and error work. I wanted to know why, and I wanted to use the equipment to figure it out.
It sounds to me like it's a way that has helped you express the artistic side of you.
Yeah.
But I've got to ask, I've never heard anybody say that engineering school helped them with their emotions. Actually, quite the opposite, to be honest.
Oh, I highly recommend it. I actually think... You know, there's a certain sense of innovation that you do need to run a certain idea and work with a group of people that you may not get along with and do it well. And, you know, when it comes down to the fundamentals of science, you can't really argue that sometimes. And, you know, you're a team. And that team mentality was very, I've always thought that, but I think it's very apparent in engineering school. Mm. And to be that team player, that's what engineering school taught me. So in my opinion, I think it has been the best education for me.
That's great. So Now I'm really curious about your pottery and how that's changed since engineering school.
Well, it hasn't really changed because I haven't done much of it. I think the load of schoolwork has been a limiting factor to me actually doing art, but I think it's just, there's so many projects that get piled on you in engineering school or assignments that you realize that becomes your normal, your equilibrium. And so piling another project isn't really that much of a problem. So I think that mentality led me to opening our own ceramic studio.
Juggling a lot of plates in the air at the same time.
Yeah.
It kind of becomes a way of life after a while.
Right. And then you learn how to just deal with it without being too stressed out. Although sometimes I'm not very good at that quite yet.
At what point did you decide, okay, so you came here specifically for school, decided to start the Hungry Squirrel and work with Dishability, and then you decided on the ceramic studio, or was that always in the works?
It's always been a dream of mine. So when I first moved to Butte, it was actually to take a break from ceramics. I had a really difficult apprenticeship that asked a lot of questions, like pushed me beyond my limits that I needed to kind of sort out.
Where was that?
That was at St. John's University.
Okay.
And yeah, normally you don't do an apprenticeship while you're in your undergrad, but I was just really obsessed with it. So I think coming here was sort of a break into kind of just live my life and, you know, be in a place that I loved. I loved the outdoors. And so for the ceramic studio, it's always been in the back of my mind, and food in general. I never really wanted to open a restaurant, but in a sense, it became a stress reliever. And the same thing with High Ore Ceramics, our studio. I partnered with somebody for that business, and my business partner and I just really love ceramics. And we're at a point where we love teaching, and I used to teach before. And
do you want to mention who your business partner is?
Sure. My business partner is Sarah Beagle. So she's a sonographer at St. James, and she's awesome. And yeah, so we operate this ceramic studio together. And for us, it's an outlet to, you know, something that we have a passion for.
So we're going to take our quick break here. We're almost halfway through, and we're going to talk a little bit more about, is it Empty Bowls?
Yeah.
That we talked about a little bit before?
Sure.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's another thing that you started up here in Butte. And that you were involved in before. So let's take a quick break, and we'll talk about Empty Bowls and more. Thanks, Chow. Listening to Heartstock. I'm Carol Murphy, your host. Thanks so much for being here. We've been speaking with Zhao Wong of The Hungry Squirrel. And what's the name of the ceramic studio?
High Ore Ceramics.
And where is that located?
It is on Continental, so 1707 Continental. We are in the same building as the Atchison Taxidermy and Butte Floral, and we're just right in the center.
So you did something else here locally that is really You know, one of the things that I love about the guests, the many guests that we've had, is people are really contributing to our community and their community, wherever that may be. And that was Empty Bowls. Tell us a little bit about that and how you got started.
Sure. So I think in general, now that I'm sitting here, the general trend seems to be every time I think that I'm going to leave Butte, I decide, oh, one last thing. I'll just do this really fun thing that I love to share with the community. And then I am like, I really love this community. Then I end up staying. So that seems to be the general trend.
That's good on us.
So secondly, Empty Bowls is sort of a nationwide project that people are trying to address food insecurity. So the money that gets donated often will go to a location that needs food, whether it's a homeless shelter, a food bank, etc. So in college, I did this for St. Cloud in Minnesota, which is a fairly big city. But what I did was bring together some potters and we made bowls, which then we held an event, and then it was a dinner where we had about 200 businesses donating soups, and that soup would generate an income for that project. And then therefore that project was able to donate to whatever organization that we chose. So in college, I chose a women's shelter, and all that money would go to that group home and their children. And then when I was in Butte, or when I moved to Butte and later thought, oh, I'd like to do that again, because I've had this experience and it was very positive. It introduced a lot of people to clay who wouldn't normally do it. And that was kind of my just spur of the moment. Hey, let's do this here.
So people are making extra bowls or helping you make bowls, and yeah, everybody goes home with a bowl? Is that how it works?
Yeah, we have volunteers who help us make bowls. And there's a couple days where we have an open studio where we teach people through Butte High. So Mike Chiava at Butte High has been super instrumental for us to try to get as many bowls as we can.
And so the high school students make the bowls?
They do, but then the community members do, and then ceramicists all around Butte contribute. So now we've been able to have 1,000 bowls, and we have the event held at the Civic Center. In the first year, you know, everybody was like, nobody pays for a ticketed event, you know. And I was like, oh, if you know, if we're lucky, we'll make $6,000. We'll be good with that. I'll be thrilled.
Mm-hmm. And the money was going to?
It was going to the food bank, specifically to the backpack program. So the backpack program sends students meal kits for the weekend so that on Monday when they come back, they can have their free or reduced lunch for breakfast or in lunch. And then that way they're not super distracted in the morning and they've been fed through the weekend. So the money specifically goes to that project. And, you know, the first year we made $27,000, and then it's been increasing to, like last year, I think it was over 70,000. So we've been super supported by the community. And I'm so happy that everyone now is very familiar with ceramics and, you know, uses their bowl every day.
So that $70,000, I would imagine just administering that and deciding what's the most important thing to spend the money on and getting the kids their meals and all of that, that's a lot.
It is, but I think a lot of that credit has to go to Kathy Griffith, who is the director at the food bank, and she's amazing to work with. And so when I approached her, I said, Kathy, I just want to donate some money and fundraise. And she said, okay, let's pick a project. And that was one of the things that she needed help funding for. And since we've been able to add more meal kits, add more items in the kits, and I'm hoping at one point we'll be able to select better food choices in the kits. But for right now, we've been able to expand into the high school and have a pantry there. So it's not, it started mostly in elementary school, and then we're able to add into the other programs throughout
amazing.
Butte. Thanks. And
so about how many kids do you think you are feeding over the weekend?
I would say 300 to 500 kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
It's pretty awesome. We're very lucky as a community.
Yes. And, you know, I think that it's very representative of Butte itself, mm-hmm. which with all of its quirkiness and reputation, Butte has a huge heart and it's very, very giving.
Right.
Yeah.
They are. Yes. And I think that's what has really kept me here to say, well, we have all these other opportunities, but what else can we add? Because I do want to live here, you know, and I want to make it a fun place. And I think there's a lot of people working on their own individual projects that I think are really awesome.
Yeah, it's, I think we're at a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk more about the Hungry Squirrel and your work with Dishability. How did you find them? Did you always know that that was going to be your partner?
I didn't always know that that was going to be the partners who I would be working with, but I've volunteered through Buttoberfest. So Buttoberfest, Cassie Wick and Todd Hoare have ran it for years, and I've always volunteered serving beer. I mean, for me, it was a very good time. So selfishly, I just volunteered. Mm-hmm. And one year they were like, we're going to buy a food truck, because it came up and we talked about it. And so when they purchased it, they tried a couple different things. And last December, when I ran the food truck for the first time, just as an experiment and just as my stress reliever, because it was the weekend before finals, I just approached Todd right before Thanksgiving. And I said, hey, Todd, do you still have that food truck? Like, what's happening? What's going on with it? And so he approved to let me take it out on the streets, and we picked a menu. I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, if you could have seen me in the kitchen, I was running around like...
They said that last week too. We had no idea.
It was insane. And, you know, I'm freaking out, and Megan was amazing. She just was able to help me out. And Ross O'Leary has been really wonderful in supporting me. And yeah, and so Cassie and Todd have always, you know, been really awesome to work with. So then after that event, we said, wow, we have something that it would be, you know, really sad if we just didn't do anything with the results. You know, the turnout was amazing. I mean, I served 50 bowls an hour. That's like McDonald's burgers flying out the doors. So for me, it was a huge wake up moment to say, wow, there are people who eat Vietnamese food and who know what pho is. You know, I don't have to dumb it down. Yeah, I don't have to just pretend like they're just noodles, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, and I realized that at that point. Yeah.
So it seems like you are at this stage integrating more of the Dishability folks into mm-hmm. your operation.
I am.
Is that how you always planned it from the start, is kind of start out and get your bearings?
Well, when we first started and when we had a conversation with Megan, Cassie, and Todd through Dishability, I had said, how can we continue this mission of having people be well-trained in food industry and retail in communication skills, and
who otherwise might not be offered
right or have that opportunity
skills
right
yeah.
to even train.
Mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
since we just said, well, we can make it work, you know, there are certain tasks that I can break down and or I can just divide up among different sets of skills, and sometimes it has worked, sometimes it hasn't. So we've been just trying to figure out what is working over the months, and now, you know, it's September, so we're about 9 months in, and it's been really interesting because some of those folks have moved on to full-time jobs because they were perfectly great with us, you know, mm-hmm. and have moved on and been able to have a more, I guess, full-time job experience. Because for me, I'm only serving every other Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's got to be a really beautiful feeling to know that you're providing skills for folks that now they've got a job.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's Jules also, I should mention, Jules has been really great with identifying.
Jules Castiglione.
I'm so bad.
Where's Jules?
So she places a lot of, she's with Silver Bell Disabilities Council, and she places people with disabilities into different jobs. Mm-hmm. So different employment. And she's one of the job coaches as well. So, you know, we started with one of her clients, and, you know, she was just doing dishwashing, and now she serves with me. So it's been really fun to see somebody say, okay, I think I'm ready for the truck, you know, and gain that confidence and then be really hands off on the truck. So it's been really neat.
Yeah. And something to, like a goal to work for and, you know, see all that come to life. Very, very cool. I wanted to ask you about how do you get your seed money? Is this, are these endeavors things that you've bootstrapped yourself or?
Definite bootstraps, multiple bootstraps.
Wow.
So a lot of it is really.
Surprised you're not wearing army boots.
Well, they're very close to army boots.
They are boots, folks.
Yeah, I've been wearing these types of boots since I was little. So I think for me, I think this comes back to the engineering aspect is, you know, you go through these courses and you take engineering economics, and what do you do with that information? So analyzing where your startup costs are and how, what is that rate of return and how fast can you pay that back? Do you have to pay that back? Do you need to take out a loan? So I've done both without taking a loan, although my bank account is very drained. But I think it was a matter of, you know, setting clear goals with myself and with the people who are helping me do this. And luckily, you know, Silver Bow Disabilities Council, they've already had that kitchen. So renting from them, for me, I didn't have any capital costs. You know, I just had a rental fee. Right. And same with the food truck. Mm-hmm, so it was a very low risk investment for me. And same with High Ore Ceramics. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So you lease the space over there and you financed all of the material. Do you anticipate staying in business? I mean, is it doing... You don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, mm-hmm. but I'm just curious.
It's, yeah, I enjoy
it's
it.
Very popular.
I really enjoy it. I think even on the days like today where there's certain things that I'm not too thrilled about in terms of, for example, one of my orders didn't come through today. For tomorrow. So, you know, you have a lot of that to troubleshoot, but, and I have certain roadblocks, but at the end of the day, it is really enjoyable to watch somebody just eat pho and just like yell out, thank you so much, you know, when they're walking by again. Yeah. So I think that's really rewarding. It's this instant gratification. Or after this, I'm going to be teaching a ceramics class. And it's always really fun to see people actually enjoy it. And it, I don't really know how to explain that. So I would love to continue. It's, you know, I'm in my last year of engineering school and it's rough.
Yeah, it's challenging. Engineering
it is
very difficult, especially if you're an artist by, you know, your basic. Mm-hmm. It's, and, you know, I'm kind of relating to it a little bit too, because I always said I wanted to be an artist and then I became a dentist, and it's not very, the science and math. Mm-hmm. So tell everybody how they might reach you and find you.
Yeah, so you can always come to the food truck or visit us at different breweries and the distilleries. I put out a schedule on Facebook, and I'm still working on that website. It hasn't launched yet, but I post the schedule quarterly. And so tomorrow we will be at the Quarry Brewing on Broadway. We'll be in the alley between Broadway and Park Street. But then afterward, we're going to swing down to the Silver Dollar at 8:30 to welcome in some Boston comics who are hilarious. So I am very excited about that.
What's your favorite dish to cook?
Oh, I think it depends on the season. I think this summer I was on a kick with the Vietnamese noodle salads that are served cold. And surprisingly, I really enjoyed wrapping egg rolls for 200 people. So growing up, that wasn't ever my favorite task. But that was really enjoyable this summer. And I think the steamed buns, our bun bao, is really enjoyable to make because you're filling this pocket of happiness. Mm-hmm. And so I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I love that, a pocket of happiness. Mm-hmm. That's a very good description. And what, we've got maybe half a minute left. Right. What's next? What does the future hold?
Well, I'm currently trying to find an engineering job. So if anybody wants to give me a job, I really miss engineering. Yeah. And I was really sad about not taking my other option. So I think mostly tourists. Returning to get...
You had another option? I can't believe that.
Oh.
maybe two or three, huh?
Well, but so mostly in Butte. Yeah, I think that would be the next step because I realized this summer I really do enjoy doing engineering work.
It's a great place. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy. Thank you so much for listening in, and we shall see you next week. Peace. Bye-bye.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5 Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.
That sign was made.